We will be going through Daniel chapter 2, at least verses 1 through 23. I am going through, I'm using the ESV, and I do apologize from some of the background. They're lighting off a lot of fireworks in my neighborhood, so real quick, we're going to do a recap of what we went through last week in chapter 1, and kind of a little summary, and so we kind of see where we're at. With that, we have the first four verses of chapter 1. We saw that Nebuchadnezzar, he was the ruler of Babylonian Empire. He conquers Jerusalem, and the Lord gave Judah into the hands of the Babylonians. And, Nebuchadnezzar, he was a puppet. And we can kind of see that where it wasn't that Nebuchadnezzar took Judah. The Lord had gave them over to the Babylonians and gave Jehoiakim to Nebuchadnezzar. So, you know, thinking about why they ended up, Israel ended up in Babylon, you know, it's because they were worshiping false gods. And with that, you know, the Lord warned them over and over, you know what, stop, turn around, but they didn't pay any attention. And so the Lord was finally, all right, you want false gods? I'll give you false gods. And, you know, they went over there. What happened was Babylon took the brightest, the young, cream of the crop, men of Jerusalem, and taking them to Babylon, and they were groomed for civil service. And, you know, they were trained, they ate the food and wine that was fit for kings, but not Daniel. And he didn't want to defile himself. And then, of course, Nebuchadnezzar, he instructed Aphanez, the master eunuch, to bring some of the captives, those without blemish, gifted in wisdom, possession of knowledge, and they wanted to teach him the language of the Chaldeans. On the next few verses, 5 through 7 in chapter 1, they trained, well, brainwashed them. They isolated them, indoctrination and concession with the Confucian. And pretty much they took them out of their homeland, took them away from everything they knew. They taught them the language of the Chaldeans. They got these captives to give up something, and then they gave them new names. Daniel was given Belshazzar, Ananias was given Shadrach, Mishael was given Meshach, and Azariah was given Abednego. And so Daniel made a decision to be faithful, not to defile himself. And verses 18 through 16, we saw the master eunuch. He says, if you don't eat this food, you won't be healthy like the others, and I will lose my head. You know, the eunuch, he was afraid, you know, if they didn't eat, he was going to die. So he was like, hey, you guys got to eat. But Daniel suggested a plan, and that was to test the captives, you know, having vegetables and water for 10 days, and then compare them to the others. And then going into verses 17 and 21, of course, you know, we already know that, hey, these other guys are probably like vegetables. They're already eating from the king's menu. So with that, Daniel was brought in for a personal interview with Nebuchadnezzar. And his friend Daniel and his friends, they were blessed for their faithfulness. Eventually, they were blessed and promoted. And now we're actually going to get into our chapter 2. So with chapter 2, we're going to have the backbone of Bible prophecy. And because it unlocks the prophecies of Daniel and Revelation, that's one of the reasons why it's considered that as well. Okay. So in the verses 1 through 23 of chapter 2, what we see here is well, kind of an introduction here. We have, do we have passive faith or do we have active faith? And, you know, thinking about this, when I learned how to swim when I was little, I was excited to go to the pool. You know, I stepped onto the diving board and I was encouraged to step out. My dad was in the pool. He says, step out and I'll catch you. And my attention was on the vastness of the pool rather than the love from my father, the strength of my father. And you see, thinking about this, you can believe that God can do something, but do you believe that God will do something? And Daniel, he's out on this diving board of a crisis, and God is encouraging him to step out. He's at a fork in the road, and he has to make a choice, facing his own death, steps out and falls into the arms of God. Faith, you might hear it. Some might say, you might come across people say, yeah, I heard of that. I'm not sure about this idea that God's up there and I'm just going to trust him. But we're so quick to trust people, but not the Lord. People live by faith in others, but we need to encourage others to live by faith in the Lord. You know, and I think about when we go to the doctor, okay? You see a doctor whose name you can't pronounce. They have degrees that you do not verify. They give you a prescription that you cannot read. You take it to the pharmacist that you've never met. And then you get a chemical compound that you don't even understand, but you take the pill. And it's like we're quick to put our faith and trust into these people, but we need to be quick to place our trust in God. And all God is saying for us, and just like he tells Daniel, is I'll catch you, just step out. But people are just like, oh no, I can't trust the Lord. I'm going to drown. So, you know, talking about faith, and right when we get ready to start on the verses here, we're going to see when you go through these verses, we're going to have three different scenes. We're going to have Nebuchadnezzar's bedroom, his courtroom, and then we're going to see Daniel's prayer room. So we'll start, let me read verses 1 through 23, and then we'll dig into the word verse by verse. So in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His spirit was troubled, and his sleep left him. Then the king commanded that the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, Chaldeans be summoned to tell his dream. So they came in and stood before the king. And the king said to them, I had a dream, and my spirit is troubled to know the dream. Then the Chaldeans said to the king in Aramaic, O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, the word from me is firm. If you do not make known to me the dream and its interpretation, you shall be torn limb from limb, and your houses shall be laid in ruins. But if you show the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts and rewards and the great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and its interpretation. They answered a second time and said, let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will show its interpretation. The king answered and said, I know with certainty that you are trying to gain time. Because you see that the word from me is firm, you do not make the dream known to me. There is but one sentence for you. You have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the times change. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can show me its interpretation. The Chaldeans answered the king and said, there is not a man on earth who can meet the king's demand, for no great and powerful king has asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or a Chaldean. The thing that the king asks is difficult, and no one can show it to the king except the gods whose dwelling is not with the flesh. Because of this, the king was angry and furious and commanded that all wise men of Babylon be destroyed. So the decree went out, and the wise men were about to be killed, and they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. Then Daniel replied with prudence and discretion to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. He declared to Arioch, the king's captain, "Why is the decree of the king so urgent?" Then Arioch made the matter known to Daniel, and Daniel went in and requested the king to appoint him a time that he might show the interpretation to the king. Then Daniel went to his house and made the matter known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, told them to seek mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. He changes times and seasons, removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. To you, O God of my fathers, I give thanks and praise, for you have given me wisdom and might, and have now made known to me what we ask of you. For you have made known to us the king's matter." So what we have here, verse 1 of chapter 2, it's a troubling dream. Something is disturbing Nebuchadnezzar, and it's his dream. It's an unusual, significant dream. Now think about this. Okay, who's Nebuchadnezzar? Okay, he's the king of Babylon. It was about 605 BC to 562 BC. He belonged to the Chaldean dynasty, well-known Old Testament villain. And he's known for his cruelty, killing many people. And he did it slowly. He roasted people over fires and watched them burn. And in chapter 1, he was the king who crushed Jerusalem. But now we meet the man himself. He's about 30 years old, ruled the most powerful empire, but yet he has no control of his sleep. And this is the first scene that's in his bedroom. And thinking about God has ways to grab attention. If he can't get the attention in the day, he will get it at night. And it's not uncommon in the Bible for the Lord to speak or direct people's lives in dreams. We see Jacob, he sees a ladder that goes up to heaven. Pharaoh sees a dream in ancient Egypt. Joseph sees and interprets dreams. So we see this. But God speaks through dreams, and he's getting Nebuchadnezzar's attention. He can't sleep. And thinking about this, you know, Nebuchadnezzar had all this power, but power has a price tag. And Nebuchadnezzar, he made it to the top, but now he's living with anxiety. Verses 2 through 9, it says here, "Then the king commanded that the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and the Chaldeans who summoned to tell his dreams. So they came in and stood before the king. And the king said to them, 'I had a dream, and my spirit is troubled to know the dream.' Then the Chaldeans said to the king in Aramaic, 'O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation.' The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, 'The word from me is firm. If you do not make known to me the dream and its interpretation, you shall be torn limb from limb, and your houses shall be laid in ruins. But if you show the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and its interpretation.' They answered a second time, 'Let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will show its interpretation.' The king answered and said, 'I know with certainty that you are trying to gain time, because you see that the word from me is firm. If you do not make the dream known to me, there is but one sentence for you. You have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words, before me till the times change. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can show me its interpretation. So what's happening here? Nebuchadnezzar is demanding to know the dream and its interpretation. And, you know, we see the part in here that says, made known the dream to me. You know, it's hard to say. It's difficult where, you know, did Nebuchadnezzar remember the dream or not? Maybe he just had a vague remembrance. But, you know, he's already in the courtroom with these Chaldeans and these magicians and sorcerers. And it says, therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can give me its interpretations. These are what the Chaldeans are saying to him. And the Chaldeans, they're the most educated in the empire, trained in literature and writings of other cultures. But Nebuchadnezzar says, tell me the meaning of my dream. And the Chaldeans are like, well, tell us and we'll interpret it. And it's funny when you see this, it's like, it's, you know, it's hard. You know, they're like, they want to get something because, you know, they need to know which way to answer, right? Because you already know that their lives probably depend on it. But Nebuchadnezzar, he couldn't know for sure if they would give the correct interpretation of the dream. But he could test their ability to tell what he had dreamed. So Nebuchadnezzar, again, if you're wise, not only can you interpret the dream, you could tell me what my dream was. And then, of course, he tells him, if you don't, you shall be cut into pieces. And this is a harsh threat, and it's consistent with the characters in the Eastern monarchs. But he says this. So now the pressure is on. Verse 10 and then through 11, it says, the Chaldeans answered the king and said, there is not a man on earth who can meet the king's demand, nor great and powerful king has asked such thing of any magician, enchanter, or Chaldean. The thing that the king asks is difficult, and no one can show it to the king except the gods whose dwelling is not with the flesh. So the wise man is like, hey, you know what? This is an impossible request. And they say, there's not a man on earth that can tell the king's matter. No man on earth can do it. Well, despite their wisdom, real or imagined, there is just no answer for Nebuchadnezzar, because only God could bring the answer to the king. And it says here, no king, lord, or ruler has ever asked such things. And when you read this thing, when the Chaldeans told this to Nebuchadnezzar, it's like as if they're trying to cast the blame back onto Nebuchadnezzar, saying, you know, it's not us. You know, you're the one that's asking. You know, no king's ever asked this before. So, you know, here they're trying to get out of hot water. You know, they're like, oh, and they're trying to, you know, throw it back, the weight back into the other court. But think about this. It's like, you know, when you think about this, and the way they're asking the king is like, well, tell us the dream and we'll interpret it. You know, it makes me think about these palm readers and these tarot cards and all that. And, you know, what is in those palm reading and tarot cards? It's Satan. Satan, this is the way, this is why we need to stay away from this. And I think about way back in the past is me and some of my friends, we saw this psychic place. So I told my buddies, I was like, you know what, watch this. You know, maybe it was a little cruel of me, but, you know, we walked into this room and I was like shrugging my shoulder, like holding it kind of like, you know, not like obviously, but kind of nonchalantly. And one of the first things that the psychic person said was like, oh, I noticed that you're in some type of pain, not realizing it was a setup, you know? So, you know, and in a way you think about it, you know, Nebuchadnezzar is trying to sit there and say, well, tell me my dream and I'll see if you can, you know, if you could tell me my dream, then I know you could probably interpret it, you know, and thinking about this. And then I was like, I did a little bit of research. It's like in the United States, there's 125 million people that probably believe in about astrology. And 70% read horoscopes for directions. They might say, oh, I'm an Aries or, you know, whatever the case may be. But from that 70%, 7% has reported to alter their decisions. That's about 12 million people altered his decisions based on what the horoscope in a newspaper told him. What's more alarming about this is there is a Gallup poll that reported that 10% of Christians believe in astrology. So, you know, the Bible says clearly there's no place in life for magic and all this because the enemy will use it to hook us. So the cream of the crop can't tell Nebuchadnezzar anything. He can't sleep. These Chaldeans, they're supposed to be the seers. They can't see anything. They can't see well. Nebuchadnezzar's faith is rattled. The Chaldeans, magicians, astrologers have come into question, and they can't do nothing for Nebuchadnezzar. But Nebuchadnezzar, he starts thinking about the future and the future of his kingdom. And this is a good thing, and we're going to see why. So thinking about future, before we jump into the next verse, is that not many people think about their future. They're thinking about only the present. It's all about the immediate gratification. What is in it for me right now? Well, you know, you might have two cars, you might have property, two houses, and so on. You have all this stuff. But do you have anything up there? Everything down here is temporary. I heard of this one guy, he's a new pastor. He needed a nice suit because he was going to give out Sunday service. He went to the thrift store, got a nice suit. And when he was giving the services, he reached in his hands in his pocket and realized that the pockets were all missing in his suit. Well, come to realize that these outfits, these suits that he got from the thrift store were donated by a funeral home, and they cut out the pockets because you can't take anything with you. And we need to think about that. You know, do we have anything up there? Not so much what we have down here. What do we have up there? And that's the important part, thinking about the future, not right now. So we need to think about the future because it's coming. Whether we like it or not, we don't know the time nor the hour, but we need to think about it. So Nebuchadnezzar's attention, it's gotten, his faith is rattled. And now we see in verse 12 and 13, it says, because of this, the king was angry, very furious, and commanded that all the wise men of Babylon be destroyed. So the decree went out, and the wise men were about to be killed. And they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. So Nebuchadnezzar is furious. He's sentencing the wise men to death. And so he's angry, furious. Nebuchadnezzar knew that false religion was a curse and had no use for wise men that couldn't bring him any wisdom from God. And then he gives the command to destroy all the wise men. And for the wise man, this could be that, hey, you know what? He's a new king. There's a situation to test the suitability of the advisors from his father. But you know what? I'm not sure. But the thing is, he was angry. He was upset, and he sent out this decree. But we see in verse 14 and 16, then Daniel replied with prudence and discretion to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. He declared to Arioch, the king's captain, why is this decree of the king so urgent? Then Arioch made the matter known to Daniel, and Daniel went in and requested the king to appoint him a time that he might show the interpretation to the king. So Daniel reacts to the decree and ask for an extension. It makes me think like, hey, you know what? That my bill's coming up. I need an extension to come up with a way to make this payment, right? But here's the thing. Daniel, he's like, hold on. He's like thinking, right? And when he hears about this, what I find interesting about this is with counsel and wisdom, Daniel answered Arioch. You know, he answered calmly, innocent, and discreetly to deal with this crisis. And he asked for more time. This wasn't stalling, okay? It wasn't like, you know, oh, I need to figure something out. No. Daniel, he knew that it takes time to listen to the Lord. And he knew that it took time to wait upon him. so many times you hear people say, well, I've prayed and it hasn't happened. Well, we can't think that it's going to happen on our time, because then that's when things get shaky. It won't work out the way we want it to work out, because it's on us. We have to allow it to come from the Lord, and we cannot dictate to God when to do something. It's on his time, his watch, not ours. So he knew it took time. And what's striking here is that Daniel didn't panic. There was no panic. There was a decree on the life on him and his buddies, and not panicking. Daniel's pretty much like, hey, what's the big deal? I can only imagine, you know, while he's saying this, other people are running around in the background like, well, we got to get out of here, trying to find the way out, hide, whatever the case may be. But Daniel was calm. And it makes me think of this, the pilot, right? In a midair, 3/4 of the engines are out. And he stands at the cockpit door telling everybody, hey, everyone, don't worry. I'm going for help. In other words, he's bailing out Sia. These are the other people. Daniel was not. He was right there. And Daniel responds with wisdom. We see in Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turns away wrath. So he asked for permission to speak with Nebuchadnezzar. Just give me some time and I'll tell you your dream and interpret it. Could you imagine this conversation that he's requesting to talk to Nebuchadnezzar? You know, Arioch comes up and he's like, all right, you're a dead man. I'm going to kill everyone else. And Daniel's like, wait. Can I just have a private conversation with the king? I'm going to tell him his dream and interpret it. You know, that's, I wonder how, you know, if I could have been there, like a fly on the wall to see that conversation, you know, and how it went over, because you see a lot of this in the movies. And, but the thing is, you have to think about it. Daniel had nothing to lose. If he does nothing, he dies. But if he does something, he could possibly live. But why is Daniel self-assured? Remember last week when the Lord said the Lord gave Israel to the Babylonians? Well, the thing is, there's comfort knowing when the Lord gave, right? That means the God is in control. Daniel had comfort knowing that the Lord was in control. But there's a difference. There's a difference between being self-reliant and self-assured. And Daniel was self-assured. And what I take from this is that Daniel went to the Lord, seeking counsel, activated by his faith in God. And here is where God told Daniel, step up, step out, and jump. And now we're shifting out of the courtroom, and we're getting ready to enter Daniel's prayer room. Verses 17 and 18, it says, then Daniel went to his house and made the matter known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, and told them to seek mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. So Daniel asks his buddies for prayer. And the captives, you know, if you think about it, the captives can't sit well with this situation. You know, they're not the kind to sit back and watch. They get involved. They insert themselves into this situation. And then it says here that they might seek mercies from the God of heaven. Okay? Only God can meet the need. Therefore, he knew that how important it was for both him and his buddies to pray. And I strongly believe that battle was won when Daniel prayed with his friends. That's when the battle was won. Concerning the secret, he had confidence that God could do unprecedented miracles. Might not perish, when it talks about might not perish, considering what's at stake, there's little doubt that the prayer was extremely earnest, okay? And God listens to earnest prayers. But they stepped up. They put their faith in the Lord. They made a commitment before man. Now they're putting their faith back into the Lord in this prayer meeting. And I think about when I hear this, the first thing I thought of is how much you know, we pray, whether it's before we go on mission trips, while we're on mission trips, whether the, we're doing the, we have the prayer night, or we, you know, anytime that we pray, how powerful this is. And it's not so much that we, whether we're just praying for what's on our heart or what we're going through, we're praying for others, and we're praying, we're seeking counsel, and we're, it's just amazing to see this. So Daniel and his buddies, they're powerfully prayed that night, praying for their lives. Nebuchadnezzar, and here's the thing, Nebuchadnezzar took his problems to bed. Daniel took his to God. And there's a difference. And I love how the fact that their prayer, his prayer, was not last resort. It was the first resort, the first thing. And that is just amazing what I kind of took from that. And verse 19, it says, then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Okay. God reveals Nebuchadnezzar's dream and interprets to Daniel. Okay. The secret was revealed. This wasn't religion. It was revelation. Daniel didn't find it out. God revealed it to him. Okay. When Daniel received this answer, this is what is amazing. Daniel received the answer. He didn't run to save the lives of those in jeopardy. He stopped and he blessed the God of heaven. Okay. Often the Lord shows us something and we cannot wait to get it going, but we need to slow down. We need to look up and give thanks to God first. Okay. In the next few verses here, 20 through 23, it says, Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. Before I go into the next verse here, we have to see something here. Okay. Daniel praises God for this revelation. And then in verse 21, you're going to see here, it says, he changes times and seasons, and he removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and the knowledge to those who have understanding. We see he changes, he removes, he knows. Daniel praises God for his power and might, and knowing that God is in command of all things, okay? And then we saw in verse 22, let me get into 21, now into 22. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. So in 21 into 22, we see that he gives, he reveals. Daniel praised God for his communication to man, grateful that God revealed his great knowledge, okay? And then in 23, it says, to you, O God of my fathers, I give thanks and praise, for you have given me wisdom and might, and have now made known to me what we asked of you. For you have made known to use the king's, to us the king's matter. Okay. So in 23, you had given, you have made known to us. Daniel's certainty of faith to believe that God gave the answer even before confirming before Nebuchadnezzar. So, you know, that's the prayer right there. The first thing he did before trying to leaving to save those in jeopardy, and thinking about your prayer life, okay? It's directly proportional to three things. Perception of prayer, okay? There are ill perceptions of prayer. But you know what? James says, the fervent, effectual prayer of a righteous man avails much, okay? The perception of God, the second thing, you know, some people might sit there and say, well, you know what, maybe God's not happy today. Maybe he's busy. You know, I'll just tell him in prayer later, you know. You know, Daniel and his friends prayed what they knew God to be, not what they thought, okay? And we see in verse 21, God is in total control, absolute control, and guides, okay? And then the third thing, perception of the problem. There's many people out there that they pray differently when there's a trial, when compared to no trial, you know, oh, I just got a diagnosis. I need to pray. Well, you know what? We need to be praying every day. Pray in the morning. Pray when you get in the car. Talk to God. He wants you to talk to him. Okay? Pray fervently. So today, you're dared. I dare you guys to talk to others about God. But also to talk to God about others. And this is the intercession right here. You might say, I'm afraid of people. You might say, oh, what are they going to think about me? Or this is just who I am. But you know what? This is what you got to do. Begin with getting alone with God. That's the most important thing. Get alone with God. Spend time with God. Because guess what? If you can bow before God, you can stand before people.